Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the organisers of the meeting for this opportunity to take part in this debate. As introduced, I'm Derek Craston. I'm chief scientist of LGC, and LGC is actually one of the organisations that provides forensic analysis into the criminal justice systems, into police forces in the UK. But I'm not here to talk about that. I'm going to talk in my role as government chemist, and I'm going to talk about the area that Mark described as beyond the courts. An interesting title because it is going to capture activity that is essentially illegal and therefore is subject to fines and subject to prosecutions, but it isn't the way in which we would see forensics normally in relation to crime and criminal investigation. So the first thing I'd like to say about it is this isn't something that's new. I'm not going to talk about a subject area that has just evolved and emerged. It's been occurring probably since goods were traded. And if you go into the evidence document and the chapter in there that deals with foods, there's a quote at the beginning of that that talks about a piece of work, a treatise that goes back to 160 BC that describes the fact that at that time wine was being adulterated. And my role as government chemist owes itself to the fact that in the 1840s there was a huge amount of counterfeiting going on of tobacco and alcohol in order to avoid paying taxes, and that's why our laboratory was established to identify these adulterations. It was very challenging work for the time, and it's very interesting looking back on some of the very early data that was being produced to see the high numbers of samples that actually failed the providence and authenticity tests. Small numbers of samples collected, but over 50% of them being found to be non-authentic or not of a suitable providence. So this isn't new. Even the horse meat scandal, which I guess everybody heard of, it was certainly in the newspapers for many months back in 2013, around about this time of year, created a massive concern, consumer concern. It initiated a report that was produced on behalf of government by Professor Elliott from Belfast, and has resulted in a number of ramifications, including the establishment of the Food Crime Unit within the Food Standards Agency. But it wasn't the first time that we'd seen that. In fact, there was a crisis in the 1940s around the same subject area, and at the turn of the 19th century, there were laws in place because people were importing unhealthy horse meat from Holland and from France into the UK. So this is not new, but there are new nuances around it that make it particularly challenging for forensic science in identifying and controlling. As to the scale, well, it's very difficult to put a scale on an illicit market. But a number of organisations have sought to do so, including the OECD. And back in 2009, they wrote a report on levels of counterfeiting. And at that time, they estimated that around about $250 billion was the scale of the counterfeit market. And they broke that down then into different subsections, and the largest of those subsections was actually pharmaceuticals, and that's an area that Mark has already discussed. Then it's food, and then it goes into electronic products, clothes, cosmetics. It's really right across the board. And if you go into the evidence document, you will see inside it particular chapters actually devoted to food, to pharmaceuticals, and to more generally to consumer products. And there are safety as well as economic implications of these this illicit trade. So one statistic from the report I shall read out verbatim, was that in 2014 over 35 million fakes were determined at European borders, and of those 25% were potentially dangerous. And as Mark says, in the area of pharmaceuticals is particularly problematic, particularly in the emerging world, and we're doing some work at the moment with one emerging economy, and it's a real issue. It's not something that can be easily addressed because these countries don't have any real regulatory system on which to base the analytical work. Food fraud, the statistics suggest, is worth tens of billions a year. The report covers the areas that are most likely and have been counterfeited the most. Not surprisingly, it's high-value products. As Mark's already mentioned, honey, but things like wine, you get in organic foods, and beer and spirits, as well as more common things like milk. And it's interesting, going back to some of the old documents, milk has been watered down for centuries. But it's an old crime. It is very, very broad in its base, but it has these new nuances. And one of the big things that are impacting it at the moment, of course, is the impact of the internet and on global trade. In one of the chapters, it describes that around 15% of retail is now in the UK done through the internet, and this causes very significant challenges to those who are in enforcement, because now you're getting organised crimes established with networks of distribution and the ability to set up websites so that when people are trawling this looking for bargains, they can easily stumble on these sites and end up purchasing counterfeit goods. So I hope that frames the element issue. What I really want to talk about in the next 10 minutes is really the importance of innovation in forensic science in tackling these new issues that we element and face. And inside of the chapter that I've written, I talk about three particular facets of forensic science that I think have been very important in our fight against counterfeiting. The first of those is our ability now to take a complex product and basically break it down chemically, deformulate it so that we can understand everything that's within it. The second is our ability to detect at very low levels. And third, and very importantly, is our ability to take forensic science and measurement science out into the field. Now, forensic science has benefited really from a lot of the developments that have gone in other areas of science. And the report and the evidence chapters talk about a range of technologies. I particularly point on the omics technologies, which enable us to sequence DNA, to look at the whole protein content of products, to look at the small molecule content of products, and able to get to develop fingerprints or identify particular signatures that enables us to tell the difference between a product that is authentic as to one that is counterfeit. Similarly, a technique called isotope dilution mass spectrometry is something that was developed for geological applications. And this looks at the difference in isotope ratios of light atoms like hydrogen, like oxygen, like nitrogen and sulfur. And from those ratios, you can get information about the place of origin of a product. So is it Scottish beef? Does the wine come from this particular region or that region? So very, very sophisticated methods now available to us to tackle some of the more complex issues in authenticity. Just as the forensic science has benefited from developments outside its sphere, so forensic science has actually enabled other areas of science. So we Mark mentioned the importance of DNA. It's now the go-to tool in forensic analysis. And we've been using that more recently and working with scientists who are doing very, very basic and fundamental research to know the authenticity of the cell lines that they're utilising are what they think they are. Similarly, forensic science has been important in driving measurement science out into the field. So you see an awful lot of the technologies in spectroscopy, like Raman spectroscopy, near-infrared spectroscopy, things that are now being used out in the field to try and detect counterfeits, and that's a very important development. Also of very significant importance is our ability to measure things down at low levels. And when we presented this previously to a different forum, I was asked, what does very low levels actually mean? So just to give you something contextually, when I look at my forefathers who were doing government chemist work a century ago, it would have been a struggle for them to look at the analysis of a very small amount, 6 grams, a small lump of sugar, in a vat of water. It would have been a real challenge for them to make that measurement. Now we can make that measurement and do make that measurement routinely, well, that same small amount in a tanker of water, and indeed, in the right circumstances, we can measure that amount in a reservoir of water, so we can detect down at extremely low levels. Now, just because we can, the question is, should we? And there's a very interesting chapter inside of the evidence documents that was written by Ian Boyd talking about environmental forensics that asks this question, just because we can measure it, should we measure it, and what does it mean, and how does that information impact on what we want to achieve, which is a behaviour that encourages people to look after the environment. So making these sensitive measurements is important and possible. And whether you should do it or you shouldn't be doing it, the important thing is that you do it well. And one of the chapters inside of the evidence document talks about quality and the importance of quality and of understanding the constraints that you have in the measurement. Part of our organisation is as a metrology institute. We work with organisations like the National Physical Laboratory, really around getting the infrastructure in place to ensure that people understand the uncertainties and levels that they're measuring, and put the necessary controls in place so that the values that they get out of their instruments they can rely upon. And then those values need to be interpreted against natural variations. So how do you know that something has been added to this water if you don't know what the natural variations are in that particular element in chemical? How do you know that it's honey from New Zealand or not if you don't know the variations across years that you would see naturally because you're dealing with a natural product? And the only really way of doing that is to have good quality data sets that you can rely on for comparison. And I think an important future development is the development of these data sets and their curation and their availability. Finally, I've talked about the importance of measurement science and forensic science in securing the products that we use and eat and take for medical purposes. But we recognise that forensic science is a thing that happens after an event. The real solution to taking this problem that's been there for centuries is to make it as difficult as possible for people to put counterfeits or substandard products into the supply chain. And that requires really good management of supply chains, and you see that inside of the pharmaceutical sector and ethical pharmaceutical companies who really understand the whole flow of ingredients through to final products. I've got mechanisms for monitoring their processes and managing their entire supply chains. It involves making sure that products are difficult to counterfeit, whether that by the addition of covert agents to the product, or overt agents, things like watermarks, or the addition of chemicals or DNA or fluorescence tags that people can easily detect. So the solution really to this is prevention rather than detection. Nevertheless, we need to continue to develop, in my view, our analytical toolbox to enable us to react more effectively to some of the threats that are out there, and we should continue to drive for products that are more difficult for those who are involved in illicit crime to counterfeit. So thank you for your attention.